podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview this weekend's Azerbaijan Grand Prix. And when I say we, I mean all three of us, as I'm joined by none other than Mr. Timo Albers-Daly and Miss Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
I'm good, thank you. You seem surprised that there's all three of us.
No, I'm just trying to do an upbeat and chipper introduction. That's all. I just thought I'll put a bit of joy and energy into it. I'm in an upbeat mood. I'm allowed to be upbeat, aren't I?
Oh, well, what makes the one of us then?
Why are you not upbeat? What's gone wrong?
Nothing's gone wrong. I've had a lack of sleep these past few days. No sleep means moody me. Just moody.
Well, perhaps we can cheer you up with some Formula One news. Timo, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm looking forward to getting back to Baku, and we've got some interesting news to dive into as well, which none of which is too surprising. I don't feel like some of it, a little bit of it is, but it's busier for Baku than we thought it would be.
Yeah, there's a fair chunk to go through. We were going to be joined by motorsport journalist Anamitha Murugappan. I didn't get a chance to actually check how to pronounce her name because she's unfortunately not here. She's fallen under the weather last minute. But hopefully she'll be back to join us for the Baku review. But we have got her predictions, so we'll keep her involved in the process as we go along. But obviously we might as well jump into some news. And the first big news is, of course, Adrian Newey to Aston Martin. And he'll be becoming the team's managing technical partner on a long-term deal with the team. He'll also be a stakeholder as part of the deal, so he'll get some sort of kickback from do good performances. And I think a big driver in this fact is that he reports directly to Lawrence Stroll. There's no complicated hierarchy above that to deal with, something Newey is known for not getting on with. McLaren would have been an option, but obviously he's got Stella and Brown, and then above them the Bahraini royal family and various other stakeholders. Vowles has Doralton above him. Vasseur has the political mind palace of Ferrari hovering over him. Aston Martin has a relatively clear structure to work with, and it's one that Newey could find a home with it, a fun home in with ease.
Yeah, I saw a brief clip of an interview that he did, that Newey said that Aston Martin is the only, or as close to, how teams used to be run back in the day, with Stroll sort of being the only active F1 team member, sort of like how it used to be with sort of Frank Williams, Ron Dennis and McLaren. Obviously, he didn't work with Colin Chapman, but, you know, Colin Chapman with Lotus, etc. And I think whilst Newey sort of loves innovation and coming up with new designs, I think he's also a bit of a man that likes sort of tradition. You know, he likes his classic cars. I think if it were up to him, we'd have smaller cars powered by V10 engines. And sort of this business model is what he's used to and likes. And he has more freedom if he's reporting straight to Lawrence. There's sort of, like you said, no hierarchy above Lawrence. And I think not having the freedom to really complete his work would really frustrate him massively. He just wants to have the freedom to get on and just do his job.
The smaller car thing, it's interesting. He was on the Auto Car podcast earlier this week, and he said sort of every time you hear the old V10s strike up for doing parade laps, everyone's hair on it stands on end, everyone turns around to listen to it. And he says in an ideal world, we'd go back to those small capacity V10s, sustainably fueled, maybe with a little bit of a hybrid assist. But he says the 50-50 balance they're moving towards doesn't particularly enthrall him. But yeah, the old style of working, the idea of having a very clear, very understandable, very approachable hierarchy is something that he vibes with and works well under. And it's interesting how he's joined a mixed team too. There's names from Red Bull, Ferrari and Mercedes poached into major engineering roles. And this is bringing together a good array of ideas and expertise from different fields and different sort of ways of working as a team. And it's a strong concept from Aston Martin. If they can get the ideas to coalesce in a productive way, there's good reason to see something exciting from them in the future. Unsurprisingly, Alonso is very happy about this, having recently signed at least a 2-year contract extension with Aston Martin that would see him to the end of 2026. So new regulations, new chassis, the perfect time for Adrian Newey to pull something quite interesting out of the bag. And I think this would open up the longest potential gap for a driver between world titles. I think Niki Lauda holds the record between his 1970s one and his 1984 title or 1985 title. So there's a big gap that Aston Martin and Alonso could be looking to get a record for.
As well, people get kind of hung up on how Newey said that he would like to work with Hamilton, but he has also said that he'd really like to work with Alonso. So he is, you know, you can't have both. but he's definitely getting his wish with Alonso, and I think it'll be a really interesting pairing.
He's getting his wish and then some. Obviously, he's on a, what, £30 million a year contract? Someone did the maths as to what his hourly rate starts out at, and it's something ridiculous, like sort of £3,000 an hour, which is ridiculous considering that his hourly rate is over double my monthly salary. I've got the number
it's
here.
It's ridiculous,
here,
but at the same time, you hear what Martin Brundle was saying about the whole situation, and they're still getting all of that for a bargain. When you think about what he can bring to them in terms of purely financial aspect, never mind everything else. So £3,000 an hour seems quite lucrative.
£3,434 an hour.
Well, now that you put it like that, but at the same time you think, yeah, you're also getting quite a nice deal out of that at the same time. And you look at the drivers, I think it's only Hamilton and Verstappen who are paid more than that, and they're driving the cars. It's kind of mad that the designer is getting that much money. But at the same time, you look at his track record, it's what, nearly 20% of all F1 races in history have been won by a car that he designed. So it's also not too surprising either. And you wonder, how did he come to that number? How did they agree to it? But also, how is it not more? And especially as he's someone who he knows his own value and what he's worth, so he can have that confidence to go up to someone like Laurent and go, 20 million, 30 million, make me an offer, and don't kind of lowball me on this one. Yeah. Because let's face it, I've got plenty of other offers.
I mean, when you look at it as Aston Martin having the chance to essentially buy one of the most successful constructors in the sport. If you think of Adrian Newey as a constructor, as a team of his own, he's one of the most successful the sport has ever seen, alongside the likes of sort of Ferrari, which is a historic mark that's been trying to dominate the sport since its inception. So 30 million to buy a winning team all of a sudden seems like a hell of a good bargain. And on top of that, you've got the prowess he can bring to your road cars. Of course, Lawrence has got a good hand in the Aston Martin road cars when it comes to getting financial return from being able to sell the new Aston Martin DB13 or DB14 as designed by Adrian Newey. That's going to be a hell of a lucrative thing. Look at what Red Bull have done, or Aston Martin have done, with things like the Valkyrie, which they did as a Red Bull project initially with Adrian Newey. That's one of the world's foremost hypercars when it comes to its sort of technical prowess and invention. Lawrence Stroll has essentially got
that part of that contract also in kind of one-ups what he was able to do with the Valkyrie. He goes, next time there is a James Bond film, your car's not simply going to cameo in the background of a scene. He's going to drive it, and he's going to drive the arse off it, so be prepared to have that. I like that. Yeah, that's a little clause somewhere in the contract.
For a sort of Lawrence Stroll's business point of view, this makes an incredible amount of sense. And yeah, I think Adrian Newey knows his worth. I think there is also scope for his paycheck to increase. I think it's been stated that 30 million is his starting salary, which I would love. I'm not going to turn down a £30 million a year starting salary. Plus, obviously, like we said, he's got sort of stakes in the team. So, of course, as the team does well, it motivates him to do better at his job. But given that it's Adrian Newey, you don't need to motivate him to do good. He wants to do good regardless. But as the team does well and he'll reap further rewards from that, I don't think £30 million is, on the grand scheme of things, lowballing. So it's an interesting one there. And I mean, it makes sense on other courses as well. He doesn't want to be too far from home. Red Bull is crumbling at the seams with its internal power struggle. Aston Martin has a strong budget, new wind tunnel and factory, loads of poached RB employees beyond just its design team. Moreover, we've got the new regs, Honda power units, which he's familiar with. And Fernando Alonso is still very much driving at his peak and is a new challenge to face. We're going to see Newey back where he started at Red Bull, which is a mid-tier team with a bit of promise behind it.
This is something for me where, on paper, like you say, or listing all of that stuff, it should be really exciting in math watching. You list the following, like Aston Martin, Alonso, Honda, Newey, all together in F1 for new regs to take full advantage of it. And this overarching kind of pantomime villain in Lawrence Stroll kind of throwing money at the situation to be in this championship winning position. But I don't know, it's still not quite doing it for me. I don't know why just yet. I can understand more now, I think, why he chose Aston Martin over, say, Ferrari or Williams, even though prospect of like Ferrari, Hamilton, Leclerc, Vasseur, and Newey, or Williams, everyone signs Vowels and Newey, it's really quite mouth-watering as well. But I think, like you were saying earlier, they made the prospect of him just being able to go old school and fulfill that last few wishes on his wish list and having proper skin in the game by having a stake in team in the company, essentially, kind of having this carte blanche approach, no restraints, clear hierarchy, getting to stay at home. That's all excellent for him and exactly what he wants. And he knows he can demand that of someone like Aston Martin because they're in this perfect position, like you say, Jesse, of being a midfield team that want to get up there. Whereas Ferrari, they look like they can probably get the rest of the way by themselves if they keep going on their current trajectory. Williams, who would have, and I blame LMA for this, would have liked to see this more because I was warming to that edge quite a bit and I'm annoyed at you for this. I blame you for him not going there now. But I think with that, it goes back to he asked for this stuff from Williams back when he was there the first time, and that obviously wasn't given to him. And also, he's been there, he's done that. Maybe he doesn't want to double dip. He wants to keep it fresh and new as much as he likes the old style of things. He's always trying to look ahead and move forward. But that's where his innovation side comes in. But I think, in terms of the narrative that plays for everyone, it's the least exciting one for me. I don't know if that's just because 2026 at the moment seems like the last realistic chance for Alonso to get a win or a championship. If it's because Stroll Jr. is obviously still wasting a seat in the sport, and any results he then gets, we'll all know is definitely because of the car and not because of him. And even if he starts doing well, who's going to get excited for that? No one really. And then there's the idea of Lawrence Stroll just throwing money at the situation. And in terms of like a rags to riches story of with an F1 team, it's not the most enthralling in terms of a storyline, whereas Ferrari be helping you overcome this massive drought to get back to championship winning ways, or Williams, it's this nice full circle moment and you go from the back of the grid to the front. I do love Aston Martin as a brand, and I do love Newey, Mello Alonso and Honda. These are all great elements, but they seem to have not managed to find a way to get me really excited about it. And I hope that changes because it'd be quite exciting, especially if Alonso can take full advantage as quickly as possible, because we all definitely want to see that. But I think depending on how long he stays and who they replace him with, that's then gonna be an interesting one to see if we can get more into it. I don't know if you two get what I'm getting at there, if you feel the same way or not, but it's kind of, I look at the other narratives for what it could have been, the realistic other places where it could have gone, I just think.
I think it depends how you look at it. You know, as much as I'd have loved him to go on to Williams, I don't think they could probably afford him.
No, that's what I put that down to.
Yeah, Aston Martin, I makes sense. I could not see him moving to Italy to work with Ferrari. You know, Aston Martin's close to home. In terms of you saying about sort of Lawrence pouring into a lot of money into this team, it's brought Aston Martin up to the modern age. You know, he's hired a lot of new personnel to really make Aston Martin successful. And it shows how much Lawrence is investing in making Aston Martin great sort of these past few years. So you can see why that would appeal to Newey. And also, in some respects, it's still a new team figuring things out. So Newey can come in and sort of create a team around him, whilst he could maybe done that at Williams. I don't think he could have done that so much with
I
Ferrari.
think it's that you can do this as Aston Martin on a much bigger scale because Ferrari, like Jesse was saying, you've got the politics there, and whilst Vasseur is being able to implement some changes, it's maybe not enough for him. Williams, it's we can offer you these things, but not on the same scale, and that's maybe where it comes into it. And also, I think it's quite amusing if you want to look at it this way, considering who's been helping him and managing him through this whole transition. This is also Eddie Jordan's last chance to get Jordan to be a championship-winning team.
The overall Jordan steer on this would be interesting, and it would be fun. I think if you view it as Jordan becoming a like a top tier team, or Force India becoming a top tier
Yeah,
team.
it's kind of annoying. I've got to jump through those hoops to get more excited for it when I shouldn't have to. That's my problem. I think I want him to be excited for it, and I'm intrigued. But I think if Vettel was still there and it was Alonso and Vettel, or if it was Drogovic and that car, I'm not sure who else would go there. Moment where you could put in place of Stroll to be genuinely excited about that prospect to take you up to the likes of Mercedes, Red Bull, McLaren, Ferrari. I'm not sure. It feels a bit like Antonelli. I'm intrigued, but I'm not sure if I like it or not yet.
You put in Verstappen.
I think it's got too many of the right
Don't know if I would,
ingredients.
though.
Like, you're almost, it's got too many of the right ingredients to even have, like, the question as to whether or not it will succeed. It will do well, whether it becomes like a proper championship contender is sort of
This thing, I don't
not
mind
really
if
up
you're
for
there
doubt.
competing for a championship. I think it's who's in the car specifically, because as much as we all find every aspect of it fascinating because we are who we are, we want drivers that excite us in those cars, because otherwise you've kind of got a Jacques Villeneuve situation where, oh, all right, I guess you're winning a championship anyway, and no one really gives too much of a hoot.
Anyway, we'll move on from New Year's. I think we've sort of covered that, and we're more waiting now to see what happens
There's a
with
lot of waiting and seeing with a lot of these news pieces at the moment. For there's a lot of people getting chess pieces in place for down the line, and we kind of got to go, maybe this is good,
it's
but
chess
we're going to
pieces
have
being
to
put
wait 2 years or so
into
to find out.
play. It's chess pieces being put into play, and it's also just sort of going, this is the worst kept secret the sport has ever seen, sort of twice in one season with Cincinnati and then Newey. Sort of both going, okay, we're supposed to act surprised at this? Cool.
See,
Anyway,
I have been using that Star Trek meme so often this year with the F1 thing myself. Really, no, I had no idea.
Something that's a little more exciting, however, is Ollie Bearman is stepping in to replace Kevin Magnussen for Baku. We got the official confirmation that the Formula 2 driver will step in for the Danish driver at the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, following the latter's race ban after the Italian Grand Prix. This will be Bearman's second Grand Prix in Formula 1, having stood in for Carlos Sainz at Ferrari back in Saudi Arabia. He finished P7 after just 40 minutes of practice in the car before jumping in for qualifying. It's also the first time in a while we've seen someone drive for two teams in one season. I haven't properly checked, but I think it's Gasly Albon 2019 was the last time we saw one driver, two teams for a Grand Prix.
Russell 2020 Mercedes Williams, no?
Yes, you're correct. That is also a good point. I
I would
completely
have
forgot about
written
that.
that down sooner, but I literally just thought of it. I wasn't trying to deliberately undermine you immediately.
Can't believe I completely forgot that one as well. That a race that pretty much had me in tears. Jesus. Anyway, you're
That's probably
thinking of
why you
something.
didn't think of it.
I don't want to relive that painful memory. Ellie Mae, you look like you've got an idea for me.
No, I had the same thinking of that. It's Russell 2020. I was thinking of like other drivers,
Like,
in
I know
like,
Nick DeVries did loads of FP1s for different teams. Yeah, but to actually have done a Grand Prix for two different teams, I think it is just Gasly Albon, and then, as we said more recently, Russell at Mercedes and Williams. But if Gasly does not score in Baku and Behrman does, there's actually a chance that Behrman will overtake the Frenchman once again in the championship standings, despite currently being only 2 points behind him and having only competed in one Grand Prix, which says a lot about A, how terrible sort of the back half of the field has been this year, but also quite how good Behrman's P7 was in the fact that it's taken him this long to be overhauled. Like, for a long time, it was like P13 overall in the standings or something. It's only recently he started to slip back, which is really quite
And this is a
impressive.
time where Bottas is saying, don't look at my current record, look at my historical record. When you're considering me for a season, you think there's a man on the ropes a bit, and he's just realized I'm in a bit of a precarious position here. Let's not look at Behrman too closely. Shit, shit, head.
I can find for you actually his standings as the season went on. Bearman, so he came in, obviously scored his P7, which had him 10th in the championship. He then dropped down to 12th in what would have been Australia. He was then just stuck in 12th all the way until Monaco. It was only by Canada that he dropped to 13th, Austria he dropped to 14th, and then after the Dutch Grand Prix he made it down to 15th. So he currently sits 15th in the championship and stands a fairly decent chance of moving further up it again this weekend. In a Haas, but even then, we'll see what happens.
It's going to be really awkward next year if Haas don't have as good a car and he's somehow finishes lower
Lower than he did
overall
after just two
season
races.
than he does in 2 races. It's going to be interesting to see what he can do though, especially given how strong he was. I don't know if you remember the chassis in Baku in F2 last year in his
Yeah,
rookie
because
season up against Vesti. He did the double
he did the double, and he
and
did one of the
just
races with a
blitzed
broken steering rack
Vesti.
as well.
Yeah, the steering column was a bit buggered, and there was that brilliant overtake around, what was it, turn 5 or 6. This really. The place where the Ferraris had their ding dong and trouble either last year or the year before, and he just overtook Vesti there as if it was the most natural place in the world. And you go, hey,
Yeah, he just
you
put it
don't
around the outside
overtake
through
there.
the tight turns of Baku. Yeah, I mean, at the moment he's currently racing Prema in F2. Prema's having a pretty turgid time of things in Formula 2. They haven't got to grips with the new design of the car, so he's sitting P14 in the Drivers' Championship there, but will make the step up to Formula 1 full time next year with Haas. So this, of course, proves to be a useful bedding in race for him.
Doesn't really get easy tracks though, does he? It's an
No.
interesting thing. He's had Saudi Arabia and now he has Baku. I know he would have obviously driven around Baku in an F2, F1 cars, very different around those really tight castle sections.
I mean, Saudi, he'd at least, he'd done it in F2 as well. It's a bigger car, it's a faster car, and the Haas isn't exactly wieldy compared to a well set up Formula One car. So he's proving his mettle. I mean, it's going to be a stressful time for his dad because his younger brother, Ollie Bowman's younger brother, has just started in British F4 as well. So it's going to be a fraught time for fingernails in the Behrmann household. Speaking of Formula 2 drivers, it's all change at the moment. Obviously, Behrmann is stepping up to F1 this weekend. So Prema have gone, well, we should probably find someone to replace him for a weekend. We need the points in the championship. We need someone. So that someone is Gabriele Mini, the guy who finished second in Formula 3 this year. So he'll be stepping up to replace Behrmann as Behrmann replaces Magnussen. And obviously, F3 has finished for the year now. So he's sort of a free agent, just sort of floating around with not much to do. So Prema have gone, you know, little Italian guy, get over here. Trident, meanwhile, have announced that Christian Mansell will be driving for them for the rest of the Formula 2 season, replacing Roman Stanek, whose contract weirdly finished mid-ish season with the team.
I don't think it's that curious, actually. It was due to terminate after Monza specifically, meaning that let's see how you do, and if not, we're going to pick someone from F3 to possibly replace you, and you've got this on to prove yourself, which at least fits the budget constraints that Stanek, I'm guessing, had, and does put a little pressure on you, but it's Formula 2. We've seen how high pressure that is, as you're about to get to, with a kind of bigger bombshell.
Yeah, so Stanek out and Mansell in. Mansell earns it, really, I'd say. He finished fifth overall in Formula 3 this season. Really consistent drive.
He's a bit of an underrated driver, I think. I don't think he's going to make it to F1. That's not because I don't want him to, but I just think he's one of those drivers who's going to get close but no cigar, but this is not because of a lack of skill behind the wheel.
I think everyone sort of had him marked out as like a bit of a joke driver. He was always quite sort of convivial and sort of lighthearted.
A bit of Ricardo in that sense. Yeah. He's got that kind of personality, but he's not as aggressive as distinct as Ricardo has been. But also, he's still kind of at the start of things, but I think there's just too many other drivers around, and it's a crowded field as much as it is. That,
yeah. It'll be nice to see if he does it.
Kind of pull something really. Yeah, it's a great opportunity for him, and maybe sets himself up for the next season with a team and commission to see what he can do there. You never say never.
Yeah, I mean, the Triumph isn't terrible at the moment either, so he's got a fairly decent chance of looking decent. But the bigger bombshell when it comes to the feeder series is Zach O'Sullivan stepping down from ART for the rest of the season due to funding issues, which is odd considering he's a Williams Academy driver, but it gets odder still. So you assume that Williams obviously aren't fronting up the cash, but despite the fact that they've just sort of freed up having to pay one Williams Academy driver by putting him into the Williams, you'd assume they're a bit more sort of open on the money, but apparently not. So obviously ART going, oh, well, by Zach O'Sullivan, what would we put in? They've simply gone for another Williams Academy driver. They've found the F3 driver who's now free, Luke Browning, third in F3 this year, 2 wins and a further podium, and just sort of gone, you there, get in the F2 car. So obviously Williams is still having money to fund him. I don't know. But equally, Williams is still supporting Zach O'Sullivan. He said in a public statement over on social media, he said that he's still working with the Williams Academy to find another racing series. So you sort of go, what's going on there?
The order of events that this all came out in seems as if it was not at all coordinated. And that mentioned about Williams in the second statement, because it wasn't in the initial one. There wasn't anything about any teams or anything there. Makes me think it was an afterthought and maybe he just didn't tell them, but if he didn't, why not? I mean, he's sitting P13 at the moment in the championship with a feature race win in Monaco that was just all kinds of gorgeous. And a sprint race win in Spa, the race that wasn't really, but it counts, I suppose. So despite kind of the P13 lowly position, he's not been terrible. And it's a bit of an odd one because being an F2, maybe Williams aren't convinced he's got what it takes, but he's not really proven he doesn't. It's his rookie season. It'd be a bit harsh, especially because he finished P2 and F3 last year. So natural kind of progression there. So it's a bit of a head scratcher and it just made me think that with Alan Tynes being the F1 future for now, Colapinto being there in the meantime, they're already taking him out of F2, putting F1, get a bit of captain there. Me and obviously Sargeant going. Maybe Williams are just sorting out all of their contracts early so they can fully focus on 2025 beyond, kind of with a refined slate. But then what does Zach O'Sullivan do? Because he's not done anything wrong as such. It's it, the whole thing kind of screams that sponsors just pulled out very last minute, and like the coordination's a bit weird. And you think, does he come back to F2 next year? My wild prediction is that he then gets announced to the Prema driver for IndyCar.
I was going down the same
that's
route.
That's the only kind of thing I can think of there, because otherwise, it just smacks of what if you're going to put him in F2 next year, why not fund the other three races this year, unless you know you've got something else already in the pipeline?
It boggles my mind, but you mentioned the IndyCar thing. It's interesting, Logan Sargeant is also touted as potentially heading to Prema for IndyCar. Both, unfortunately, Williams, I don't want to say dropouts, that seems unfair on them, but drivers who have been part of the Williams Driver Academy, let's put it that way. Both of them American drivers, both of them incredibly talented in their own right, so it makes sense for them to go and do continue doing single-seater racing. And again, Prema opening up those spots in IndyCar makes a hell of a lot of sense for them to sort of shuffle that way. And again, they've both got links to Prema, they're both sort of familiar with the team and its setup from Formula 2 and Formula 3 relatively recently, so it wouldn't be unwise for them to make the move in that direction. But it's all go with the feeder series at the moment as well, because Abby Pulling, Sophia Flersch and Victor Martins are all expected to test for Nissan's Formula E team at the moment as well. Norman Nato is currently expected to be returning to the seat to replace Sascha Fenestraz. Fenestraz is leaving. Nato is maybe heading in, but at the same time, they're going to be testing Pulling, Flersch and Martins. And at the same time, it's great that we're getting female drivers tested and sort of potentially put as an option for this. Again, Victor Martins is an interesting one because this is only his second year in Formula 2. So it'd be interesting to give him a good year in Formula 2 on top of this, a third year, just to see what he can do before Alpine figures out when they want to move him up into their team or not. Or maybe Alpine have already come to the conclusion they don't need him for Formula 1. Buddy, we've got a better option. Formula E. So we'll see what happens there. And as Timo and I have already mentioned, Prema's IndyCar lineup, we mentioned it, of course, with Zach O'Sullivan. And news from Prema's IndyCar lineup, or as I want to now call it, Prindycar. They're running the numbers 90 and 83. That was their big announcement they were hyping up. 83 is, of course, 1983, the year Prema was founded and launched into Italian F3 the following year. 600 wins later, the team now celebrates its 40th anniversary. Nice. And 90 in 1990, the outfit won its first title in Italian Formula 3 Championship. Robert Colciago scored 3 wins to beat fellow countryman Alex Zanardi, still racing, and Max Angelelli, who I didn't get a chance to check on what he's up to these days, but I know Zanardi is still racing and doing very well at it. So yeah, Prema off to IndyCar with their numbers, but there's no word on the drivers for the squad yet, but it's nice to see a new team entering a racing series. Speaking thereof, Lotus have something coming along their pipeline, and they teased it with a video featuring the Lotus 72, which is interesting. And the other question I now ask is, of course, who did Mario Andretti win his title with? Lotus, albeit in the 78-79 chassis. But still, could an Andretti entry bring Lotus back to the sport? Big heritage name, great worth on the grid, great value. Renault Power 2 would be part of it. It's a bit of a reach, but it'd just be interesting to see. I think if they're going to try and make a comeback to the grid, Formula 1 went, yeah, well, you're not heritage enough. So obviously Andretti went, sod it, you want heritage, bring back Colin Chapman, my boy.
What's a car I could talk about? Lotus.
Yeah, I'm sure you could, but we've still got some other news to flick through. I'm afraid I can't let you give us a little. We'll do a spin-off podcast where you can lecture us on the Lotus 79. How does that sound?
And carbon fiber.
And carbon fiber and cloning before one and all that. Yes. We'll do that at some point. In the meantime, all 10 Formula One teams have been found being compliant at all times with the 2023 financial regulations, which is nice to see. There's been no funny business this year, though Alpine and Honda did bungle their procedure somewhat. Essentially, they didn't spend too much money. They were perfectly within the regs. They just got the form wrong, which I think is kind
which
of funny.
Is
especially
so typically Alpine.
Yeah. We have got all of our numbers here. That's on a post-it note. Oh, you wanted someone's a form? Ah. Can you accept some post-it notes? No. Shit. But anyway, yeah.
I think I've just figured out why we don't have any listeners in France.
In France. It's because I keep doing things like that. Second small note is Pato O'Ward is rumoured to be driving a former McLaren in FP1 in Mexico. And this is This is actually quite interesting if you're a follower of all the politics that surround IndyCar. It's a great fuck you to IndyCar, whose management recently said that Pato isn't important enough to warrant a race south of the border, despite the fact that he has his own fan activations, he has his own merch stands because his merch sells out more than all the other McLaren drivers. Like, even Alexander Rossi sort of came out and spoke really promisingly for Pato Awards. And look, I've been long to Pato fan moments. It is huge, and they make me feel welcome there as just sort of the other guy that sits next to him in the car. But like, Pato's up for the championship title this weekend. He could do it.
No, he's not.
No, he's not. Who am I thinking of?
Literally someone else. There's only three drivers. He's not one of them. Not mathematically eligible. You're thinking of Alex Palou.
That's it. I always get them confused. Anyway, but the fact is, he is a fantastic driver and genuinely one that the sport ought to be paying a bit more attention to. So IndyCar have gone, yeah, no, we're not going to bother looking at a Mexican sort of race, even if we did piggyback it off of NASCAR heading there. So him getting a chance to hop in the McLaren in Mexico is quite a nice fitting thing. It's not been confirmed yet, but it'd be nice to see. Anyway, that's the news
I
out of
think
the
it'd be
way.
good fun to see Perez when he leaves FY end of the season combine forces with Pato. They set up their own IndyCar team just with all the money that Perez can bring from sponsorship and general Mexicanness, and they just do it themselves in a very Thanos-y kind of way of fine, we'll just go bigger. We'll kind of use the Andretti route that they're kind of used to get into one of the right. We'll just pool our sources and then we'll get something that way.
Get so
I'd be
big from
interested to
content, right?
see IndyCar around that F1 circuit, actually,
I think
because it's not my favorite circuit in the world, and IndyCar is pretty exciting wherever it's gone so far, from what I've seen. And if IndyCar can't make that track interesting, then maybe it's time to look for another venue. So this would be a great way to test it out. Have an exhibition event. They had an exhibition style race at Thermal Club earlier in the year for charity.
$1 million race, yeah.
Not the best circuit in the world, but it was an interesting spin on it and didn't have anything to count towards the championship. Why not do kind of an exploratory kind of an event there like that and find out that way?
We'll see what happens. Anyway, speaking of McLaren, Baku weekend is an important one because there is a chance they could take the lead in the Constructors' Championship this weekend. Do we think they'll do it?
They can, but they won't. It will.
And McLaren are only, what, 8 points behind now? And the short answer is yes, I think they can. They have the fastest car. They've been outscoring Red Bull for a few races now. Red Bull is struggling with no sort of real direction. If McLaren screw their heads on correctly and tell their drivers that if they're next to each other on the grid, they are not to race each other and are to work as a team until they're a bit in a bit more clear air, and then they can race each other. They do it like that, then yes.
You
Yeah,
sound
that's
like a
what the fire
disappointed
rules are.
parent.
At this point, I am a disappointed parent.
Not
Probably
cross,
justified.
just
Let me get that on the
disappointed.
record as well, but it's just amusing how personal you seem to be taking this. Would you like some of this?
Yes, please.
Yes, I don't drink wine, but wine does go straight to my head and give me the best sleep ever. So maybe that is
We
what I
should do
need.
a podcast on wine. I don't think you should. We know what you're like with alcohol and podcasts. Good thing we never released that one. I've done podcasts where I've had a beer or two before. That's been fine. It's usually when I've had like several and nothing to eat and the stress of producing a live event. That's usually where it goes a bit wrong. Anyway,
Even thought of it made you fess up on the words there.
I was just thinking about the lovely, cool, refreshing taste of a beer. Anyway, it's been a long day. McLaren, yeah, maybe taking the title or the lead in the Constructors' Championship in Baku. Chances are they won't because they don't seem to be able to put together a cohesive strategy or anything beyond the phrase papaya rules, which nobody seems to know what it is, let alone their own drivers. Anyhow, we'll move into then our predictions and we'll start with pole position. And Anamitha has gone for Charles Leclerc, fairly sensible prediction. He's always pretty quick around Baku when it comes to putting together a single lap. Meanwhile, we've got two predictions from McLaren and Timo, you've gone for Sergio Perez.
Only double winner in Baku history so far. He is good in a street circuit.
Yeah.
You say he's good in a straight line.
Maybe. Say again.
I thought you were going to say he's good in a straight line.
I thought he was also going that way as well.
is not bad. I mean,
Baku is straight lines.
See, this you're making my case for me at this point. And it'd be a good place for him to continue his somewhat trajectory upwards. He's not been doing terribly since coming back from the summer break. He's been doing more of the bare minimum than we've been expecting. I'm not saying he wins by a stretch of imagination, but I'm not silly. But a pole position would be a good thing for him to do.
I mean, you've
it's said... Baku. I'm going for craziness with these predictions. This is me just trying to justify it ever so slightly with him. Ever so small bit of logic.
I mean, you
it's going to get harder to do as we go through these predictions, don't
you? Yeah, you said he's going for pole, but then he's nowhere on your podium at all, which suggests he falls back at least three places. Ellie May, you've gone for one half of the McLaren garage.
Yes, because you can't go for both. So it's Lando Norris.
Yeah, but I was saying like that because I've gone for the other half of the McLaren garage of Oscar Piastri because I think he's just going to be quicker and better. So there we go. The podium, Anamita, Piastri, Leclerc, Gasly. Interesting. I love the inclusion of an Alpine driver on there. It's something that I copied over. Piastri, Leclerc, again, I think it's going to be sort of Monza, but the other way around, which I quite like the sound of as well. Timo, you seem to have sort of had some sort of mental unwell.
I did this before I opened the bottle of wine. I would like
that is somehow more worrying.
Is that your first bottle of wine?
My first bottle of wine today.
Yeah, ever. Just specifically.
Oh no, oh dear Lord, no. I don't know what number on there. But my logic here is Baku, the last couple of years, not been the most interesting Grand Prix. But 2016 to 2021, we've had some absolute corkers. And we've had the messed up podiums, but all fully legitimate and just brilliant to watch as a result of the chaos that is Baku. And we need that back in this season. And we've gone into it with this very low expectation. I've been going into it with a very Las Vegas mentality of we'll see what happens. I've got no expectations race by race, and we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. But this could be the Grand Prix where we get some proper nut stuff going on. So Alonso gets his elusive win that he's been chasing for so long now. Ricciardo is in P2 because he goes well here. And Albon gets P3 because, god damn, it would be nice to see a Williams on a podium again.
Yeah,
if I pull this off, I look great. And if I don't, you just blame me for being a bit ambitious, but that's been me all season. And this is also the guy that predicted Lewis would win Silverstone. So have some success rate with this. Not much, but enough.
He's chatty when he's had a bit of wine, isn't he?
He is. He opens up a bit more. Well, he's blushing now. Ellie May, your podium. Is he blushing or is he flushed? Is that the alcohol? Anyway, podium.
My talent.
I've gone for Norris win, followed by Piastri in second, because they would have sorted out everything, and Russell in third, because he's had a lot of bad luck, Russell, recently. So he's going to have some good. It's going to happen, but he's going to come third. Going to stay out of all the Baku chaos and trouble to bring it home and get a podium.
Yeah, no, that might well happen. It'd be nice to see him get some more points back on the board.
I'm like, mine's less realistic than Timo's.
No, it's not. No, it's less realistic. It's just it's more realistic, and it's therefore harder to pick holes in. I'm sort of left just sort of going, yeah, no, you've been sensible with that. Congratulations. I can't sort of blow holes in your argument, whereas I've gone for Leclerc, Piastri, Ocon. At least with mine, there's one obvious loophole in this that everyone's going to go, are you absolutely mad? To which I say,
I've got an obvious loophole.
Well, which is McLaren gets their sort of team orders correct. Yeah, no, that is actually becoming more and more of a fair point.
I don't know which one makes less sense, McLaren getting their shit together at this kind of a circuit or you with an Alpine in the middle.
Well, we'll see what happens. If it's the Alpine in third over McLaren getting their shit together, we know
I kind of wanted to be Gasly in third now just to annoy you.
Yeah, well, then the guest gets points. I don't think the guest has scored points on the predictions in absolutely ages. So, hooray for
That's
them.
my kind of that's the fight I'm in anyway. That's what I'm at.
Yeah, that's where your fight is in the sort of the predictions championship. Podium's out the way. The other thing we need to decide is fastest lap. We've all gone different with this one. Annemiek Verstappen makes sense. The Red Bull is still relatively quick, and it's Verstappen. He's a ruthless operator. I've gone for Alonso. I think Aston Martin are going to have an interesting setup there. And then we get to two interesting ones that could be tight between them. Lando Norris and George Russell. Ellie May, go first with yours.
Like many of my fastest laps, my brain goes, think of a driver, any driver. It came up with Russell first. I mean, Russell last year gave me a lot of points with fastest lap, and I've kind of stuck on to that, even though he hasn't really done with that this year. So maybe I need a new strategy.
Yeah, fair enough. Timo, you're going for Lando Norris.
Think of a driver I hadn't chosen in a while or at all, and was somewhat realistic, but also a little bit out there because I'm thinking if I'm getting this kind of podium, maybe Lando, then just seems to be getting past this one.
Okay, that makes sense. And then, of course, our wild predictions where. Oh boy, there is a lot to unpack with this one. So, Annemiek, Ricciardo in top five would be great to see. It's certainly a wild prediction.
It's under mine.
Yeah. Timo, yours is.
Ambitious.
But possibly also rubbish. What is it? Say it for the listeners.
Both Haas and Nick Sauber's in the top 10, which between two of those are Sauber's and one of those is Haas is Behrmann, and you've seen what my podium is. There's not a lot of wiggle room for any of the supposed top teams here. So I'm putting a lot of eggs in the basket of a truly wild back here. You'd love to see it, though.
Well, I would be very pleased to see it. I think it's going to be an interesting one if that happens.
Plus, you
Ellie
kind of
May,
need it to happen
I do
with
also kind
yours.
of need it, actually. Yeah, this is very true. We'll go straight into mine then, which is Haas score 7 or more points more than Minardi, thus overhauling them in the standings. I think that would be interesting because 7 points split between two drivers is relatively achievable. So we'll see what happens there.
Like there's an easier way that you could have said that.
Haas
I feel
outscored
like you said
Minardi
it
by
on most of
seven
what he
points.
says.
You could have just said Haas overtakes RB in the stand in constructor standings.
I wanted to be specific. Oh, it's so many times that I'm not specific with this. You moan that I'm not specific. And then when I am specific and add detail, you moan that I've sort of been overly verbose about it and sort of not made it simple.
Is that not specific? They can either overtake them or they can't.
I'm just trying to cover all bases, man.
Okay,
What more
that's
do you want
fine.
from me? What's your wild prediction then? Go on.
Colapinto Pinto scores a point or points. Again, I've been specific because if I say he scored points and then he scores a point, you're like, no, you're not getting it because you said points.
Well, if you just
That's
put one plus
terrible.
point, you'd be fine. That would be a great way of being a
Oh,
specific. And
okay, I can just say Colapinto finishes within the top 10.
there we go. See, that's unequivocal and concise. Thank you. We've got some additional predictions from Race Recap's Jonathan Koo. Predicts that McLaren versus Ferrari for the win, with Mercedes keeping Verstappen out of the top five, and that Alonso, Albon, and Hülkenberg will all score points. Those are some interesting ones. Certainly, Hülkenberg and Albon. We'll see how they get on.
It's
Anyway,
possible that all of us could get majority of our predictions correct if we game it out correctly. And I'm not asking you to do this right now, but it looks possible that all of us could get something here.
of us could get something. Yeah.
And yet, none of
I'm thinking the wild predictions in particular.
Yeah, I mean, even to the podium and like the podium combined, certainly in my case and Annemiek's with Jordan Kuhn's McLaren versus Ferrari for the win. We're both on for that one. That's a great overlap. And when it comes to world prediction, yeah, I mean, it's all by and large doable. It'd be an incredible race if they all come true. But we'll have to wait and see. And that's all still to come. Anyway, that brings us very much neatly to the end of this week's podcast. In the meantime, if you want any more from any of us, Timo, where can you be found other than at the bottom of that rather nice looking Merlot?
Very nice looking, to be fair. You can find me on Is It Fast This Week, where I've got a brand new interview out with Francesca Mabani, so do go and check that out. And everything else you can find via my social media, so t.elmwood.david on the course.
Beautiful. Ellie May, where can the people find you?
Instagram mainly. I'm still getting those Concours of Elegance pictures out. There'll be another one of them this week, and then it'll be back to Silverstone before Castle Coon.
Lovely. And if you want more from me, you can find me, of course, on social media as @JesseOnCars, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, across all of those, with loads of pictures at the moment coming out from Goodwood Revival. And of course, at the moment, you can also pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly or Motorcycle News, both of which have my Goodwood Revival coverage in them. One is all pictures, and one I've done some writing and been talking to some interesting people, including the head of Sunoco and Anglo American Oils about their sustainable fuels. In fact, they've now made 5 for the Goodwood Revival, which was really quite impressive. Anyway, that out of the way, we always give a little shout out to our listeners and RSS, the people that sort of pushed the audio version of this podcast out, have updated their analytics page, which means I've lost all the really weird and interesting places that listen to this podcast. So if you're still listening, thank you. You'll show up on our map inevitably. Specifically like the weird locations of like Barbuda and sort of all the bits around Africa as well. Surprising amount of listeners there. But in the meantime, undeterred, greetings and thanks to our listeners in and around Falkenstein, Bavaria. If any of you are so inclined, a case of Hofmark's Hell or Weisse beer with the pop tops would be lovely. Beyond you, what now?
I hope you like that.
Oh. Just about to conclude the podcast, and you've got a point. I was on a flow. What is it?
Well, you know, can you say about different places giving us alcohol?
Yeah.
Well, I had the Vineyards of Surrey Hills like my Instagram post, and that's a bit closer to home. It's a collaboration between 5 different vineyards in one Instagram post. So I think between them, they could probably give us a case of wine.
As the resident wine tester, I concur to this.
I mean, I'm not against it. I'm not saying we shouldn't explore that avenue. Do they listen to the podcast?
We take them wine.
Maybe it exists, seeing as they liked my picture.
Maybe they do. Maybe it's worth a shot. If you are working at, where did you say it was, anyway?
Well, it's a collaborate. It's, well, they're called Vineyards of Surrey Hills.
But if you own a vineyard in Surrey Hills and make wine and listen to this podcast, I feel like the third point is kind of moot. You'd be listening to this if you're listening to the podcast. Get in touch. We'd love some of your wine. Thank you for listening. We'll be back after the Baku. This has been a very jumbled podcast. We'll be back after the Baku Grand Prix with a review of all the track action. Of course, we're expecting Formula 1 to be quite interesting. We've got Formula 2 there as well, so that should be pretty spectacular too. In the meantime, plenty of racing to enjoy, plenty of us still out there on the internet, and we'll be back after the weekend with a review of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix.